6:12 now on this Wednesday morning, October 2nd. I don't know if you saw the vice presidential debate last night. This is a little bit of what J.D. Vance had to say, and I find it interesting, and I'll tell you why in a second.
I believe that whether you're rich or poor, you ought to be able to afford a nice meal for your family. That's gotten harder because of Kamala Harris's policies. I believe that whether you're rich or poor, you ought to be able to afford to buy a house. You ought to be able to live in safe neighborhoods. You ought to not have your communities flooded with fentanyl. And that, too, has gotten harder with Kamala because of Kamala Harris's policies.
What I find interesting about that is J.D. Vance kind of put Tim Walz into a corner because, well, you can't crap all over the sitting president, but then again, if you're going to be honest about it, the vice president is known to have little to no power over anything, and that's why a lot of politicians are hesitant to even run for vice president, because they feel as though they'll be put onto this island where they're never seen again. Justin Buechler, associate professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University, joins us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. Am I accurate there when I say that about the vice president having little or no powers?
For the most part. I mean, there's an old saying that the job isn't worth a bucket of warm spit. Mm. And it sort of depends on who the president is, because the president can delegate more or less authority to the vice president depending on the job. So some vice presidents have had more authority, like Dick Cheney had a significant amount of authority under the George W. Bush administration. But a lot of vice presidents have relatively little remit. And so Vice President Harris has had some responsibilities, as, for example, with the border, which maybe does not work to her advantage. With respect to the economy, almost none. And with respect to inflation, zero. That is pretty much entirely the purview of the Federal Reserve.
But it does, in a way, I guess, strategically, it did kind of put Vance into a hard position, not Vance, put Walz into a position, because just from the debate standpoint, it's not going to change anybody's vote, I don't think, Professor. But it was interesting to me because it's like, well, he can't really say, well, that was Biden I guess he could have said it was the Federal Reserve when it comes to that. Tell me your thoughts on the debate.
So it was a relatively conventional debate in most ways. There are a couple of moments that have gotten attention, like the fact-checking and mic cut, but relatively civil, which unfortunately is something that we have not seen in recent years. We've seen a lot of commentary on who won on style points, which is kind of a pointless and stupid thing. We had the obvious introductory questions on Iran's missile attack on Israel. But honestly, it was a relatively mundane and uneventful debate, as most debates are.
Somebody texted in, Vance wiped floor with Walz. I like the point J.D. Vance made. If Kamala had day one plans, and why hasn't she implemented them the last 4 years while she's been in office, which goes to what we just addressed, correct?
Yeah, Kamala Harris has not been president. She's been vice president, and that means having almost no real authority. I mean, officially, the job of vice president is presiding officer of the Senate, which doesn't even provide any real controlling authority in the Senate. The job of presiding officer essentially means that she casts a tie-breaking vote when there is a tie-breaking vote to be cast, and she has some ceremonial duties. And beyond that, it's whatever authority is granted by the president, which is relatively little. She has not been in charge of anything. And as for how much credit or blame goes to the president, that depends on the issue. There are some things that are directly attributable to President Biden, and there's a lot that's not. But to Kamala Harris, no.
Somebody texted also and said, my mind hasn't changed, but it was the most civilized debate I've seen in many years. Now, that is an accurate text to me. I don't think a lot of people's minds were changed, but it was nice to see civility for a change and not a lot of ugly name calling.
Yeah, we passed that very low bar, which it's distressing to think that's the bar that we're cheering ourselves for crossing. What can we say?
Well, the term moron wasn't used, so there's that. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Nobody challenged anybody to a fight, so there's that, right?
Yeah, and given the state of Ohio, there was a famous moment in an Ohio Senate debate, remembering that J.D. Vance is the senator from Ohio, where there actually was a challenge to a fist fight. So, yeah.
All right. Let's talk about how the things that are happening in the Middle East could affect this presidential election, or if they could.
As for whether or not they will affect the presidential election, the general answer is not in any large way, because for the most part, U.S. elections don't tend to turn on foreign policy. U.S. elections tend to turn on domestic policy, or at least they tend to turn on the state of the economy, and people attribute the state of the economy to domestic policy for the most part. American voters are less concerned with foreign issues than domestic issues. It's simply more relevant to people's lives. Now, that said, in a very close election, it's possible for smaller issues to matter. It's just that you have closer divisions. As for the extent to which the Middle East is going to influence voters, if you think about a really close election, you have a couple of things going on, and this influenced even the fact that Tim Walz was on that stage rather than Josh Shapiro. I mean, if you remember that the selection of the vice presidential candidate, there had been some people predicting that Josh Shapiro was going to be on that stage. Josh Shapiro, obviously governor of Pennsylvania, important swing state, but the pressure within the Democratic Party, within the activist base was, and I'm just going to say this, don't pick the Jew. Mm-hmm. And that may have helped Kamala Harris with Pennsylvania, but the politics within the Democratic Party didn't allow that. And now we have flare-ups.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. So now we have a flare-up with Iran, and we don't know exactly where this goes. But the politics within the Democratic Party have put a lot of pressure on Kamala Harris. Pennsylvania certainly would have been easier had Josh Shapiro been the running mate. But I think that's the bigger concern for the Democratic Party with Iran and Israel, the fact that it was Tim Walz rather than Josh Shapiro.
Somebody texted and said, at least we didn't talk about hand sizes. So there's that as well. Another positive right there. 620.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah, we'll take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back with Justin Buechler, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University. You can feel free to text in your thoughts on the debate last night. Somebody said, I am very concerned with what's going on in the Middle East, and I don't want another world war. I'm sure a lot of people are, but I don't know how that relates to your choice of a presidential candidate. Somebody else texted in, would your guest argue Dick Cheney had zero impact? Well, actually, Professor Buechler said that Dick Cheney had a lot of impact. Personally, for myself, I think Cheney was running a lot of what went on from the Oval Office when the second Bush was president. 621 now, traffic, WWL. 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Justin Buechler, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University. When it comes to the feeling among voters in the swing states, what's going to turn there? First of all, let me go back a second. What about Helene and North Carolina and the effect that that's going to have on the election at all, or Georgia even in terms of voting or federal response? Or will that be a factor at all, do you think?
It's hard to say that it will have much of an effect. There's actually a relatively famous study in political science about the effects of natural disasters on election results that it can actually move election results away from the incumbent. This is actually, it goes back to the original story behind Jaws. If you remember, there were actually shark attacks in New Jersey. So there's a paper by Chris Akin, Larry Bartels on shark attacks and floods and things like that. And incumbent parties actually can be punished for natural disasters if there is a perception that the policy response is insufficient. However, that is dependent on whether or not the policy response is perceived to be insufficient. And that sort of means it's unclear at this point whether or not the incumbents will be punished. It's possible. I wouldn't hazard a guess at this point because it really depends on whether or not there's a perception that incumbents are perceived to respond insufficiently. There was some evidence after Hurricane Katrina, which obviously you in New Orleans remember, that may have moved a few votes, although not all that many. And obviously in the 2004 election, George W. Bush was reelected. So the effect is not all that big, but it's probably measurable.
Somebody texted in, and I don't know if they're far off here at all. They said to them, it seems as though it's either pro-Trump or anti-Trump. It's not necessarily for Kamala Harris or Waltz. It's either you love Donald Trump or you hate him, and that's what this election is going to turn on. Thoughts?
So it's really hard to say. Usually a presidential election is about the incumbent, and that's even when the incumbent is termed out of office. So the normal rules of political science would say that it's about Biden, but Biden's not even really in the picture anymore. So my normal response would be to say, no, it's about Biden, even though Biden's been replaced by Harris. But Donald Trump has a way of just sort of sucking up all of the oxygen in the room. And that kind of makes us question the normal rules of elections. In general, I default to the political science models that say that voters think about presidential elections in terms of the sitting president, because the models have a lot of predictive power. But it's certainly hard to keep President Biden in mind when Donald Trump just sucks up so much of the oxygen.
Thank you, Professor. I appreciate your time. Justin Buechler, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University. Couple of things here that I wanted to clear up. As it relates to the vetting of Shapiro, let me turn this down for a second here, and then we'll get on with our work. As it relates to the vetting of Shapiro, there were a couple of things that went on during the vetting of Josh Shapiro that also could have affected his choice to be the vice presidential candidate. He had some problems with a sexual harassment complaint against an aide, as reported by the New York Times. It took him a while to respond to that. And there was also, when he was Attorney General of Pennsylvania, a case of a woman that was stabbed repeatedly from the front and from the back, like 8 times from the back, 10 times from the front, once in the head. The fiance broke down the door to find her body, and they ruled it a suicide, because he had no defensive wounds. And at that time, then Attorney General Josh Shapiro had some connections to the fiance's family. So there was a lot of stuff in his background besides just being Jewish, just to be fair and to be factual about it. For those of you texting in saying, how could you not know that? How could you this? How could you that? I guess I was kind of like focusing on those things that I think would really be the deal breakers when it came to his nomination. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Jeremy Alford about the governor's plan to change the tax system in Louisiana here on WWL. All right, 6:40. 4:16 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Jeremy Alford, our friend, editor and publisher of La Politics Weekly. Talk about the governor's press conference yesterday, rewriting the tax system, call for a special session. Jeremy, you have forgotten more about this than I will ever know, so the floor is yours. How you been, first of all?
Good to be talking to you.
Good to have you back. Tell me about what's going on.
Well, this is the most aggressive tax overhaul that we've seen proposed in at least a generation. And it's got a lot of moving pieces, and we're still waiting for the details to come out. And actually, later today, Tommy, we should start seeing some of the model legislation for this, which will kind of start to fill in some of the gaps. But the big overall picture is that Jeff Landry has proposed what he has described as income tax for everyone. If you pay income taxes right now, you'll receive a cut under this plan, according to the governor. And there's a couple of different things he's looking at to make up for what would be lost revenue for the state. Because that's something that we talk about every time when we talk about income taxes, is that if you get rid of them, you got to replace that tax revenue with something else. And one of the ideas is that the governor is looking to apply the state sales tax structure to services and maybe goods that aren't currently being taxed. And we've seen this debate before over streaming services like Netflix, and the legislature has always been hesitant to do that. In addition to that, the governor would try to balance this on the back of eliminating tax breaks for TV and movies, which is something we talk about every session, it seems like, and eliminating the quality jobs tax break that investors rely on.
What is that, Jeremy? I'm not sure. I get the film thing. What is the quality jobs tax break? Do you know?
Well, I mean, in broad terms, when a company comes here or an existing company wants to get a tax break from the state for a certain number of jobs that they create, those jobs have to be quality jobs, and there's benefits and salary and all kind of other thresholds as well.
So he wants to get rid of, again, we maybe don't know yet, but he wants to get rid of the whole idea of it or just the quality part of it?
As far as I know, he wants to eliminate the entire quality jobs program.
Because
and
what
that's
this,
capital Q, capital J, that's an actual program.
What this gets to, and what I wanted to jump in here and just ask you, it seems as though what he's trying to get rid of is, in essence, the tax subsidizing, the taxpayer subsidizing job creation, where you look at it bottom line, and I start asking this question about the film industry. 5 years ago, it's like, okay, well, we give them this X amount of credits. How much do they provide in jobs, or what's the net effect? And I know people that are in the film industry are going to get angry right now, but my question always was, and it's not just film, it can be anything. If you're giving a company a tax break to create a job, is it a net win for the state or not? Because if not, then in essence, you're subsidizing the jobs, and the people are, in the bottom line, working for the state, right?
Well, I mean, you pretty much nailed one of the arguments, and that's something that's debatable when the state and others and investigative journalists have gone and looked at these jobs to see just how quality they are and if they were actually delivered. But again, we don't have specifics on this yet. I'm not sure if there's going to be any other tax breaks on the table, but if it's only the quality jobs program, there's still going to be other tools in this toolbox of the state to recruit and create new jobs.
Let's talk about the sales tax.
Yeah, I was about to, because that's kind of the big one, because, mm-hmm. You know, last under our last governor, the state was facing kind of shaky fiscal times, so there was a temporary state sales tax added, a 0.45%. And that expires next year. And that's been something lawmakers have they weren't quite sure what was going to happen there, because it's a big pot of money. And it looks like the governor wants to maintain that 0.45 cent sales tax, take it from temporary to permanent. That's a really interesting stance, Tommy, because I think some people could argue that is a tax increase. You got a tax that's about to roll off, meaning that taxpayers would have a savings. But I think that the governor and other supporters here are going to urge voters and legislators to consider this package as a whole, to not look at it as just that they are preserving that temporary sales tax structure, they are also doing all of these other things in concert with it as well.
Let me take a break. We're going to pick it up here when we come back. This is very complicated stuff. I wish it was simple, but it's not. And we also don't know yet what the details are. We're expected to find out some more of that. I got a document from Louisiana Committee of 100. Is that affiliated with the governor, Jeremy, as far as you
know? No, but they do often work hand-in-hand officially with Louisiana Economic Development, and it's basically a group of economic development professionals.
So I got that yesterday, so that's not necessarily affiliated with what Jeff Landry, as far as we know, wants to do, or we'll find out later?
Well, that group and several others that we can talk about now or after the break are going to be spending a lot of money on this.
All right, so. Let's talk about it after the break. All right, 6:50, 10 till 7. More, we come back with Jeremy Alford, editor-publisher of La Politics Weekly. Right now it's time for traffic on WWL. 6:55, 5 till 7. Quickly back to Jeremy Alford, editor and publisher of La Politics Weekly. This is WWL. I'm Tommy Tucker, and governor announces yesterday he's looking for a special session. He's looking to rewrite Louisiana's tax code. Jeremy, there are a lot of people that have vested interests in this and that will be spending money on this. Talk about that, if you will, please.
Yeah, I mean, most notably right now, there's the Pelican Institute, which is a conservative think tank. And a lot of the money that I think is going into this group are the same folks who wanted the Constitutional Convention earlier in the year. But Pelican Institute has launched a six-figure media buy starting this week to push what is their plan. And there is some overlap between what the governor is talking about doing and what the Pelican Institute is talking about doing, with a few exceptions. The Pelican Institute also wants enhance spending limitations on the legislature, so that there's there would be new expectations about how much spending could take place. So I think we're going to see a lot of ideas in the regular session next year, which will be a fiscal session. All lawmakers will be able to bring their own fiscal or tax-related ideas. And that's why I think it's so important for the governor right now to make sure he has his own special session. He's looking at doing it between Election Day and Thanksgiving so that he can control the agenda. The only thing that lawmakers will be able to introduce and debate during a special session will have to be on the governor's call, which is another word for an agenda.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the role of Cameron Henry in this.
Yeah, Cameron Henry has carved out a unique role at the Capitol. I think anyone who needs to do anything through both chambers has to go sit down and meet with Cameron Henry. Senate presidents have a way of dictating tone like that. But, Cameron Henry seemed to be at the tip of the spear in regard to opposition to any kind of chatter about a constitutional convention or a summertime special session. And his big thing has been that, if you want senators along for the ride on this, Governor, you need to show us the details. And that's been the big holdup, is that there really haven't been any details shown prior to these efforts. But I think that's going to change starting today.
This is extremely complicated policy, right? The devil is in the details on all of these things. We've not
Absolutely.
Seen the details.
Yeah.
So to the public, this is going to have to be presented in broad strokes, because I think few people have the time or the energy or the expertise to delve into this and do an analysis of, well, this will mean that for him, or this will mean that for the other one. Is it better for this? Is it better for this? It's got to be painted in broad strokes. When it comes to the legislators, there's going to be a lot of wheeling and dealing involved. And you can say what you want about Jeff Landry, but he is politically astute. Accurate?
Absolutely. And I think that's why, just like with his press conference yesterday, and I think with any details that are released today, like model legislation, the messaging is going to be income tax cuts for all, meaning everyone's going to get a piece of it. Whether that works out once the entire package is passed, we'll have to see.
And the media buys are designed to influence the legislators and influence the public to then try to influence their legislators.
both, Tommy, because a lot of these big items are going to have to be approved by voters on the ballot so that they can change the Constitution to implement some of these changes.
Hey, Jeff Landry must be a pretty good student of Louisiana politics, huh?
I would say so, yeah.
He knows the system, man, I'm telling you. Thank you, Jeremy. I appreciate your time, as always.
As always, take care.
You bet. Jeremy Alford, editor and publisher of Politics Weekly. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll talk about this plan to build a $10 million brew pub in Gretna. Got Jefferson Parish and Gretna and everybody all up in arms. We'll talk to both sides, spend an hour on it. When we come back here on WWL.